Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and it's good to be with you. This week, we are once again hearing from our friends from Advancing Voices of Women, or AVOW, for a civil conversation about eviction. According to Eviction Lab, Fort Wayne ranked 13th in the nation for evictions, and that was before the COVID-19 pandemic. With the economic fallout that has come with the coronavirus, the United States faces an eviction and homelessness crisis. We'll learn about the laws that govern landlord and tenant actions for the eviction epidemic. We may not agree, but we can still have a civil conversation. AVOW has been bringing events of this type to Fort Wayne for several years now, and last month held their third outdoor event at Bar Street Market since the start of the pandemic. The pandemic is also the source of this week's topic. The toll taken on the economy has been historic, and with it, many are out of work and unable to afford housing. Our civil conversation will begin with Nikki Quintana, the event's MC, introducing the panelists taking part. Before we hear from her, thank you to AVOW co-founders Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing AVOW events in our community. And special thanks to Luke Holliger for providing audio for this program. One last note. This event was recorded outdoors, so there will be sirens and road noise in the background during some portions of the discussion. Just keep that in mind if you are listening while driving. Here's Nikki.
My name is Nikki Quintana, and I'm on the board of AVOW. So welcome tonight. We're going to be talking about the eviction epidemic. We have three great panelists, and I'm lucky to personally know all of them. So I'll do an intro. We have Andrew Thomas, who he's right here. He's the staff attorney for Indiana Legal Services. Andrew Thomas is a public interest attorney at Indiana Legal Services. He's also an adjunct professor of government at Trine University. He formerly served as an AmeriCorps VISTA at HUD headquarters in Washington, D.C., focusing on homeless assistance programs. Mr. Thomas holds a Doctor of Jurisprudence and a Master of Public Affairs degrees from Indiana University, Bloomington. He also enjoys playing in the Fort Wayne area community band in his spare time. We have Jeff Vaughn. He's a real estate professional and a local landlord. Jeff Vaughn entered the real estate field in 1985. He won the Rookie of the Year Award, and in 1996, he served as the president of the Fort Wayne Area Association of Realtors. In 1997, he was named Realtor of the Year. He has managed property since 1989 and has owned and rehabbed over 55 homes. He was a founding board member of Project Renew, a Central City housing initiative that invested over $28 million in mortgages and repaired 421 owner-occupied homes and conducted hundreds of home buyer courses with thousands of students completing the course. And as a property manager, he's managed over 140 homes. He attained 100% collected rent rate year after year while maintaining a 97% occupancy rate. And we have Kelly Lundberg, who is the Deputy Director of Community Development, Office of Housing and Neighborhood Services. Kelly is a community development professional responsible for implementing initiatives to attract and support housing investment and for creating and executing the City of Fort Wayne's housing strategy. In 2017, Kelly was selected to lead the City of Fort Wayne's OHS. Under Kelly's leadership, OHS was transformed into a highly efficient and productive organization serving over 150 families a year, both directly and through dynamic partnerships, providing home owner repair, down payment assistance, lead paint remediation, financial assistance, and the development of affordable rental housing. So thank you all for being here with us this evening. We are going to go ahead and start by allowing each of you to talk kind of from your perspectives on the eviction epidemic causes, what are some solutions, and kind of your insights from your unique roles. So we'll start with Andrew.
Thank you for that introduction, Nikki. I'm glad to be here. I am an attorney with Indiana Legal Services. I currently am also heading the Tenant Assistance Legal Clinic, which was recently developed here in Fort Wayne in response to the pandemic and the need to help tenants to stay housed and to avoid eviction. We have seen a surge in evictions. You may have heard that hundreds of evictions have recently been filed in Allen County after the statewide moratorium on evictions ended. For many months this year, there were no evictions in Allen County or in anywhere in Indiana unless they were emergency type evictions. But those started back up in mid-August. I've personally been seeing and going to trials for the last couple of weeks. I would think it'd be useful for everyone to know just what the process is for evictions. Often when someone gets behind on their rent or they breach some part of their lease, maybe they break something or they have someone there that shouldn't, like a guest who shouldn't be living there sort of thing, the landlord should usually give some kind of notice, usually 10 days, sometimes longer. For instance, if they're under a federal housing like Section 8, they might have as much as a month warning. The lawyer answers, it kind of depends, but there should be some sort of notice to the tenant that the landlord expects to go to attempt eviction. The landlord will then go to the court, file a notice of claim, it's called, basically start the lawsuit for eviction, have that delivered to the tenant, and then a hearing will be held. In Allen County, there's actually two different kinds of hearings. There's the usual trial hearing where we all know where you go in front of a judge, you would argue your case, say why the landlord will say why the tenant should be evicted, the tenant will say why they should not have to leave. But there's also a second type. It's called the claims calendar. This is often used by attorneys who represent landlords. You don't actually go in front of a judge for these first hearings. You go and talk to the landlord's attorney. It used to be that these claims accounts hearings would be held at the courthouse, the small claims courthouse on 1 West Superior Street. However, now they're actually held in the basement of Citizens Square behind you for purposes of social distancing and certain safety precautions to take during the pandemic. If the tenant does not go to this hearing, whether it's the either type, they will be held in default and eviction will be granted in their absence. If the person comes to the claims accounts hearing, they can then ask for an additional hearing and then go in front of a judge, usually a few weeks later. At the trial hearing, if an eviction is granted, the tenant will have usually 7 days, sometimes longer if there's circumstances that require it, but almost always it's going to be 7 days. And after that 7 days, the landlord can go to the sheriff's office, get a writ from the sheriff. The sheriff will come by and basically force the tenant to leave the residence at that time. There's actually even an additional portion. There's another hearing that a tenant will have even after they're evicted. They often will have something called a damages hearing. This can happen months later, and it's when the landlord and the tenant work out how much is actually owed between the landlord and the tenant for things like back rent or any kind of a damage that might have been caused by the tenant, or maybe the tenant thinks that the landlord should give back their security deposit, that sort of thing. In Indiana, the laws of landlord-tenant law tend to favor the landlord, and it is fairly simple for a landlord to file for eviction. They have to wait a little bit of time, but compared to other states where we might have to wait months and months, it's not as difficult here to file for eviction. For instance, here in Indiana, a tenant cannot withhold rent because of a landlord's inability to make certain repairs. That's not how Indiana has created their system. The tenant would actually be expected to either leave the rental property or to sue the landlord separately. to get those kind of damages. And many tenants get confused. They think at the eviction hearing that they can argue, well, my rental property is horrible. There's mold. There's water dripping from the ceiling. Everything's broken. But the judge will not be interested in any of that because all of that would be at this damages hearing much later. So if the tenant is not prepared to argue why they did not pay rent, for example, they likely would be evicted normally. After the moratorium ended, how Island County is working evictions is that usually every Friday, but sometimes on Tuesdays now, they will hold eviction hearings. They often are holding them in person, but they are socially distanced. It used to be that everyone that was going that had an eviction case would just be put into a large room altogether to hear each case one by one. Now, however, they're having people come just one or two people at a time to the courthouse, and they're all being heard separately in separate rooms with social distancing and masks, obviously, for everybody's safety. This is causing the process to be a little bit longer now than it used to be, whereas it used to be just a couple of weeks from filing the case to an eviction hearing. Now it's taking, I'd say, about a month, month and a half to get a hearing with some variables in there. One thing that has happened in the last couple of weeks that was a bit of a surprise, I think, both to the landlords and the renters and attorneys, was that the CDC came out with a moratorium on evictions, separate from all the ones that we've had before. There is actually a eviction moratorium in place right now nationwide. It does cover any rental property, including mobile homes. They do not have to be federally backed. The CDC is using this through their quarantining power because it's a public health emergency. If a person fills out what they call a tenant declaration, and if they qualify for what that tenant declaration says, that tenant will be covered and protected from eviction until the end of the year. However, the tenant has to sign that declaration and give it to their landlord, and they have to do that under threat of perjury. On the other hand, the landlord, if they do not cooperate in good faith with that, there are federal criminal penalties that can include imprisonment and fairly hefty fines if they don't cooperate. This is still quite new. In the trials I've done, I've noticed that if a person comes to trial prepared with documents showing, yes, I sought rental assistance, yes, I did try to pay my rent, I'm doing what I can, you likely can be covered and protected by this. But we've also noticed that just a lot of people don't know about it right now or how to use it, and it's just so new that we're trying to do it. We are making available information on who can qualify for this and access to that tenant declaration form so people can be protected by it. Through this tenant assistance clinic, we are hoping that we can help folks who have gone through a lot of stress this year through no fault of their own. A lot of people have not been able to pay all of their rent and make ends meet simply because there has been a pandemic. The classic example would be, say, someone was a waitress working in March, and suddenly they had no job anymore. And it's only been recently that they're probably able to get back to work as restaurants opened up. We do have that resource, and we hope to continue to be able to help people through the year.
Thanks, Andrew. How many individuals do you think have gone through the tenant assistance program as of right now?
Last I looked, we had at least 70 separate clients through our clinic. In comparison, though, there's been, I think, at least 400 filings, and I think there are several hundred pending in Allen County. So we're only helping a fraction of the people who probably do need some legal guidance.
Okay. Well, thank you for all your information. We'll go on to Jeff.
Good evening. It's an honor to be here with you. Thanks for having me. My name is Jeff Vaughn. I've been a landlord since 1989. Over the course of those years, I would be what you would consider a small landlord. I probably have had 400 tenants over the course of that time. Other bigger landlords will have had 400 tenants in the last 2 years, just to give you some sort of a balance. I've had 17 evictions over those years, and then I have helped realtors six other times with six evictions, is kind of guiding them through. I'll give you a kind of a background. Andrew mentioned that Indiana has some laws that are really lean towards the landlord, and that's very true. It's probably one of the easiest states to be a landlord in as far as requirements and compliance issues. When you think about California and what a landlord would go through there, we have none of that here. Everything's streamlined and is in pretty much in the favor of the landlord. Having said that, at the same time, I think there is a law that is just immutable, and that is, in an eviction, everyone loses. Everyone loses. Nobody gets rich. Nobody gets ahead. He may disagree. This would be interesting. See what Andrew would say about that. But my experience, from personal experience and just observations, it's just a miserable experience, and everybody loses. Obviously, the landlord has got to turn the unit again. He's got to go through the marketing side of it, the showing, the screening, the lease up. Everything is just a repeat. And we value long-term tenants. We value the fact that we don't have to do all that, because obviously as those things are going on, there's no income, there's no revenue on that particular house, on that particular apartment. So eviction is the last thing we want to do, although as Andrew pointed out, it is fairly easy for a landlord to achieve that. I think I want to talk tonight about two different ways. First of all, evictions is what the cause is and what the possible cure is, and then we can look at COVID evictions, which is obviously an anomaly, and it's just a different situation. The cause is primarily inventory, very low inventory. The rent burden that we have in our community, where people are paying 30 to 50% of their gross income and even more than 50% of their income, is very high. And a report that was generated by a University of North Carolina student, was she doing her master's, Natalie? This was her master's, and she spent all of last year, or a good part of last year, in Fort Wayne working with Kelly and others, and she generated a very interesting report filled with a lot of documents, a lot of data, and she found that 59% of our citizens are renters are rent burdened, meaning, again, 30 to 50% of their income goes to just rent, not food, not utilities, not insurances, not child care, transportation, all those things. And it's very hard to get a foothold. It's very hard to gain wealth when you're in that position. So as a community, we should be interested in making sure, or ensuring, or endeavoring to help people get past that. And inventory is a big, big problem. When Natalie did her report, wages were low, and I see things coming up to where $14, $15 an hour is becoming typical for a starting pay. One of my tenants, 16-year-old sons, just started at a local retailer, $14 an hour, 20 hours a week. The kid's making $280 a week. And so the income is starting to come up from just observation. But that is a big part of it, the fact that we still, in Indiana, we may be affordable, but we still have a real wealth gap or income gap, and it's still a problem. I think another reason for evictions, and this was interesting, is there's a very poor relationship between the landlord and the tenant. They don't see each other. They don't interact with each other. It's very common for a landlord not to see that tenant or have any kind of contact with them for an entire year. So there's just this big disconnect between landlord and tenant, and that's something that a landlord has to be mindful of and be aware of. I have a former retail background from JCPenney, and you can imagine if your customer walked in and things were not a good experience for them. If your customer walked in and you didn't greet them, if your customer walked in and you didn't become a part of their shopping experience and even a part of their life, if you could. And that's what landlords have to do. So what you have, and the reason for that is, you got a lot of mom and pop landlords. Landlords that have 2, 3, 4 units and are working a full-time job. And so rental for them is something that is on the side, and they'll get to it when they can get to it. That includes not only the relationship building with the tenant, but it also obviously includes the care and habitability of the property. So those are some issues, some things that cause the evictions that we see, is that disconnect on the tenant-landlord relationship. I think it's very important. And speaking of mom and pop, I think that there's a lot of landlords that could use a lot of training. This became a profession for me. I invested a lot of my time and energy into learning this and to knowing how to do it correctly. And I see a lot of landlords that don't do that. They just buy 3 or 4 houses and they just open them up. And even now, I'm pretty much retired, but even now my phone still rings at least once a week from a landlord requesting information, and the question is usually fairly basic, and it's kind of like, you probably ought to know this, and it's a little surprising that they don't know it. So I'm somewhat critical of that. At the same time, I will tell you there is a Facebook group in town, and it is going to serve the community well. It is grown from 500 members. It's now up to 1,262 members, and they are all young landlords. And every one of them seems to be committed to the ethics of providing a positive, good experience and providing a positive habitat. And I'm very impressed with what some of these young leaders have done with this, and I think this peer pressure is going to serve the community very well and strengthen our neighborhoods, frankly. So I'm encouraged by that. Landlording, really, we're looking for a business partner. Somebody who will work with us, that's who we want to put in that house. And to do that is really simple. All we're doing is reducing risk. That's primarily my job, reduce risk. Take my $100,000 asset, exploit it, and reduce risk. And I do it with 3 questions. Can they pay? Will they pay? Can I make them pay? It's just that simple. Can they pay? Will they pay? Can I make them pay? Do they have the job that will service the monthly rent? Have they paid? The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And so you go back and look to past landlords and past credit, and have they honored their debt? If the answer is yes, you've got a winner. Can I make them pay? And that speaks to, can I take them to court and win a judgment and a damage suit and actually get paid on that judgment? And it also says, do they value their credit to the extent that they will protect it by doing whatever they have to do to make sure that they pay? And that's, you see that all the time. The judgment notwithstanding, just do they value their credit, or they, this is something that's important to them. Can they pay? Will they pay? Can I make them pay? That's what I ask. And a lot of times, I don't know if we got any of our bankers here, but we look at the four C's of credit, which is character, credit, cash, and collateral. And do they have the character? And the credit report very often reveals that. Do they have some cash into the transaction? Is their credit such that they want to protect that? And does their credit say that they're a good risk? And the collateral is their own personal word, their willingness, or their what they value for themselves. And you can pick that up. So that's what we're looking for. So when we get into an eviction, very often I've had on a number of occasions people who ran into trouble, but all the screening, all the thinking that went into putting them in that house, that hasn't gone away. They haven't changed. They've just got their transmission blew up. And so do you want to jettison them out and start all over? No. You want to try and work with them as best as possible, because they're probably a pretty good business partner, and you want to hold on to that. So that's the way that I see evictions in this community, and we need to continue to strengthen those relationships. I think that's a very big part of it. I think landlord education and things that are being done right now in that Facebook group, they're really advancing their knowledge base. They share constantly on this Facebook page experiences they've had and tips and tricks and information on how to be a better landlord. It's very encouraging. Things are getting better because of stuff like that. I remember a landlord took me to lunch, and he was had 45 units, and he was just frustrated, and he said, you know, in any given day, I'd sell all 45 of these. I hate this business. And I thought, there's one miserable man. What an awful way to live, to hate this so much. And it made me think of the professional pathway to property management, the profitable path to property management. And I see that coming on board now. That was because of some of these peer groups. So that's my take on the eviction crisis that we see in our community. Now, to the COVID crisis that is causing it, I have three frames of references. It's called biggerpockets.com, and anybody could get on that. biggerpockets.com. And it's been interesting because there'll be 30 pages of commentary nationwide from national landlords all over. And the things that I'm reading on biggerpockets.com as it pertains to COVID is encouraging in that nobody, and this is a fairly direct group, it's very civil. You don't get a lot of name calling or, but it is very direct and it's blunt. And it's just landlords talking to landlords. And so I remember a guy in Tennessee made a comment somewhat to the effect that, what did he say? Oh, as COVID started, well, these tenants should have been prepared for that. They should have their rainy day fund. We got a lot of that. And it was just like, what planet are you living on? And throughout that entire process, hundreds of responses, that generated a lot of responses. And pretty much nationwide, the landlords were saying, this is going to be a tough year, and everybody's going to get a haircut. And people are people, and we can't do that. We can't be throwing people out. And some of them were worried about how you evict people, and they just they were dismissive of the human cost. And when they made a comment like that, hundreds of landlords nationwide reminded them, this is not a pound of sugar. This is something more than just a human being. And it was really encouraging to see that. Avail did a report, and I have that report. Nikki's got that. If you want it, we can get it to you. And what they did is avail.com is another landlord site. And they surveyed 2,932 renters and 2,225 landlords. And through this, it was primarily the landlords look like me. They were over 60 years of age. 67% of the landlords were white male. And most of those landlords' income was between $50,000 and $125,000. And they talked about what it was like to be a landlord. The tenants, their age group, 35% of the respondents of the 2,932 tenants were between the ages of 24 and 30, and their income was between $25,000 and $50,000. And throughout this report, you really get to see where they recognize that there are people who are struggling and that they're looking for solutions. And primarily, they're putting payments on the backside of it. And a lot of the landlords are realizing, yeah, you could put payments on the backside of it, but you're just adding debt to debt. And eventually, you're going to have to wipe that stuff out. You're just going to start forgiving some of these months. And it's a good report. And it's, again, I think it's encouraging in that it shows the landlord as somebody who has not only a business brain, but has a business heart and understands these people have been with me for 3 years. I'm not going to just summarily throw them out on the street. CDC or no CDC, HUD or no HUD. We got to figure a solution for this. They're worried in that they, of course, their mortgage payments are not being made and they're in forbearance and they have to go, their payments are probably going to be put on the backside of their mortgage. So their 30-year loan just turned into a 31-year loan is what it's going to amount to. And maybe that's just some of the risk of commerce. So that's what I see with COVID. I see this being handled. I don't have the facts. It's interesting to listen to Andrew to determine just how many evictions will occur because of non-payment. And there are some handouts on the red chair that I created February of 2019. That's how old that research is. And you're welcome to take some of that. It has a lot of data about evictions from the year 2018, came primarily from the small claims court and interviews I did with the magistrates at the small claims court. And that's my bit.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you all for coming to listen to a panel speak about something that has become very near and dear to me personally and professionally. I spend a good portion of my day at work trying to find solutions to this problem. I do believe that as a community, as a nation, that we are, if not there, we are on the cusp of a housing crisis due to COVID-19 and probably a very large increase in evictions. And so why I care as a professional and as a community development professional specifically is so looking at short term, we care about this because we are essentially looking at a large percentage of our renter populations becoming precariously housed and even long term difficult to house. And so as Jeff mentioned in when he pulls a credit report and he looks at it, and I think Andrew has talked about this in previous panels, that the landlords can go out and they can look and see that somebody has an eviction filing on their record. Maybe they were never even formally evicted, but if they have the filing, it's out there forever. And so we hear from a lot of our homeless shelter providers that there are literally people in our homeless shelters that have a housing choice voucher. So they can guarantee that their rent is going to be paid. They have a difficult time finding a landlord that will accept them because they have an eviction on their record. And so as we look at the fact that we have thousands of families out there who are cost burdened already pre-COVID, they were spending more than 30% of their income on rent and utilities. So they were already what HUD calls precariously housed. Now COVID happens. So we have an even more substantial risk that these people are now going to become long-term difficult to house, which probably could, we're looking at, and I see Pam out there, she can testify to this, I believe, that we are going to overburden our service providers and our homeless shelters by trying to keep up with an increase in people who need a place to go when they're evicted. So looking at that as a short-term issue, I also look at it from the community's perspective as a long-term issue. If you go out and you do research on evictions, a common question that you'll come across a lot is whether evictions are created or caused by poverty, or if they do in fact cause poverty. And I think that that's pretty much the chicken and the egg question. I'm not sure that one necessarily has to cause the other. And so if you look at short term, evictions can cause poverty. So you have loss of income. If you think about it, if you're in your existing rental and something, your transmission goes out and you can't make your rent. And I know, Jeff, you are a good-hearted landlord. We have a significant number. Andrew, I know you can say that we have a significant number of large landlords and out-of-town landlords who will literally file eviction the first day after the payment is late. They have no heart, no compassion for people. And so when we look at it, I'm in my unit, my transmission goes out. Oop, I have an eviction filing. I'm evicted from my unit. So now I'm scrambling to find a new unit. I have to come up with a first month's rent again. I have to come up with the deposit. So financially, that is a burden to me that I maybe wasn't planning for. And so I think in that way, it does cause poverty. But I also think that it causes generational poverty, too. So if you really look at the issue of evictions, they cause so much family instability that if you think about these kids, all of a sudden they're out of their units and, you know, they may have to go to a different school. God forbid, maybe they're living in their car. And so that's just the emotional and mental trauma on these families. And then just trying to rise above it, I believe, becomes very difficult for them. And so I really feel like it's cyclical. And that we as a community, if we, through this COVID pandemic, if we don't really step up and try to address this head on, that if when we look back 2 years from now, we're going to be in a really bad place, I think, as a community. I actually tried to bring some data, and I apologize for those of you. I'm a data nerd. But I wanted to tell this story, I think, here at the tail end of Fort Wayne. And I will preface all of this with saying that we actually, after our last, 2019, in March, April, we had our Fair Housing Summit. And we actually did a similar panel on evictions then. And it was highly attended. There was a lot of interest. And so we left that session, and I actually started an eviction task force at that time to look at this issue and try to find some short and long-term solutions. And so we were like, you know what? We want to put a face on eviction because we think that there's a misconception about the people who are being evicted, that they are nuisances and that they are, you know, just dirt bags, for lack of a better word, I think is the perception a lot of people have. They just are not paying their rent. When the reality is that evictions are, the prevalence of evictions in minorities is much higher. It's also a lot higher for single moms. And so when you look at it, if you start to put the face of who really is getting evicted, I was hoping at that point that the community at large would take a better interest in and advocate for possibly some legal changes down at the State House to provide more tenant protections. Plug your ears, Jeff. I'm sorry. what we found very early on is that if finding eviction data is almost impossible. We, Natalie, the intern, she literally went and sat in the small claims court for several days and just tracked people on a piece of paper. And so we actually don't have good numbers for how many evictions there have been in Fort Wayne. The eviction lab has data that goes back to 2016. That actually is our most recent data. And if the eviction lab doesn't step up and do this again, the chances that we get more recent data, I feel like, are pretty slim. And so as of 2016 in Fort Wayne, we were the 13th highest. We had the 13th highest eviction rate in the entire United States, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Indianapolis is ranked number 14, and South Bend was number 18. So we have three cities in the state of Indiana that rank in the top 20 in the country for the rate of evictions. In 2016, in Fort Wayne, we had 8.33 evictions every single day. We are 5 percentage points higher than the national average for evictions. We're 6 percentage points higher just in filings here. And as I've said before, even a filing can be very significant and cause damage to people's long-term ability to find rental housing. Something else I thought was interesting is the U.S. Census Bureau is doing weekly pulse surveys now through COVID to try to look at how it's impacting our families. And so I was looking at the data last night, actually, and I was alarmed to see that in Indiana, when they surveyed residents of Indiana, 46.1% of the people that they surveyed said that they had a likelihood or a slightly increased likelihood of being evicted in the next 2 months. 46% of the people that they talked to evicted or foreclosed. They had, which I actually also thought was interesting from my data nerd perspective, is Indiana actually ranks higher than the United States in things like housing instability right now and ability to pay your normal household costs. So your food, your transportation, your childcare, those things. We rank higher. We actually are lower than the U.S. in the U.S. average in the Pulse survey when it comes to people anticipating losing income due to COVID. So that tells me that these people aren't necessarily just being evicted because of loss of income due to COVID. This is a persistent issue here in Fort Wayne, Indiana, that maybe is being exacerbated. The eviction moratoriums that they did are a blessing, I believe, to us as people who are trying to find solutions and scrambling to fund programs and find partners like Andrew and like Brightpoint to help. But the reality is we're just kicking the can down the road. So now the CDC moratorium, people are going to be even farther behind. So when December 31st rolls around, happy new year, you're behind 6 months in your rent. There's no agency that is going to be able to provide you $6,000 in back rent. So as much as I look at it as a blessing that it gives us a little more time, I still feel like, you know, we still need to continue to push and get the word out to let people know about their options. We need to keep throwing money at programs to try to provide rental assistance and legal aid.